Blog Talk Radio.
Guess what? Today is a special show. The time has come. I'm going to do President Obama's report card. Oh, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. This is a segment that I thought up probably about a year ago, and I said at the end of his time in office, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to compile a grand list of all the good things he did and all the bad things he did. And then I'm going to spit a grade out the other end. And I struggled a lot with how to do it. But anyway, so today's a special show. It's an hour-long show. There's a chance that the entire hour will be me talking about this. I don't know for sure, but we'll find out. I do have some other stories prepped here, but we'll see. It might just be this one giant segment of me giving President Obama, because I want to go into as much detail as possible with how he did in office since he gave his farewell address last night. Okay, so without further ado, let's get started. I'm just taking a sip of my drink here, and let me set this up proper for YouTube. So I have what I think is a very important segment for you guys, a special segment. You're probably wondering why the color scheme in here is not the traditional secular talk colors of the black and the green. Since it's a special, I decided to switch it up. I got the blue going on right now. So now you know whenever you see blue happening behind me, something really big is about to go down. I want to go ahead and do a report card for President Obama. I want to lay out every single thing he did that I thought was good, everything he did that I thought was bad, and then I want to give him a grade at the end of it. Now, I struggled a little bit with how to do this, because one way to grade him is, okay, how did he do in terms of what our ideal system is? So if the end goal is basically more or less implementing Bernie Sanders' platform that he ran on into law in the country, if you grade Obama against that, well, obviously he does significantly worse than if you grade him against, for example, how past presidents have done. If you grade him against past presidents, he's probably one of the best. But if you grade him against some sort of ideal system, an ideal president that, you know, does all the things that we as progressives and liberals want him to do, well, then he does really bad. So my first thought was, you know what, let me give like a weighted grade and an unweighted grade. So in other words, you know, one of them you do in comparison to the presidents, the other one you do in comparison to the ideal. You call one the weighted, the other the unweighted. But I decided against that at the end. I don't know exactly why I decided against it. I'm just going to give one grade here. But I want to say that my standard is neither one. So my standard isn't Barack Obama up against an ideal president that implemented the perfect platform. And my standard is not Barack Obama up against just the other presidents. My standard is kind of like a mix of them. So it's a little bit of a mix of idealism and pragmatism and realism. So I don't know why in the end I decided on one grade, but I did decide on one grade. So again, sit down and buckle up, because I'm going to go through what I think, everything he did that's good, everything he did that's bad. And hopefully this will give everybody a good sense of Barack Obama's time in office. I'm doing this today because he did his farewell speech last night, so I figure now's as good a time as any, because I either do it now or I do it, what, the day before Inauguration Day? There's still a chance, so I'll just give everybody this forewarning real quick. There's still a chance that he does some more stuff before inauguration. So, for example, right before I came on air now, there's some chatter and there's some reports that he's considering doing something that I would have never guessed he was going to do, which is he has Chelsea Manning on his short list of commutations. Well, if he does that, he's going to go up a little bit in the estimation. If he doesn't do that, he stays the same or goes down a little bit in the estimation. So I'm going to be as comprehensive as possible, but I only have the information that I have today, basically a week before inauguration. So just keep that in mind if he does anything in the next coming days. Adjust accordingly in your mind. So I'm going to start with the good, then we'll get to the bad. Again, whole heaping dose of policy substance here for you, and we'll get a good picture of at least what I think of Barack Obama and how he did in office. So first of all, this is in no particular order. This is in no particular, it's not in chronological order. It's not in order of the best good thing he did, to the who cares kind of good things he did. First of all, immigration executive order. So he did this in his second term. The immigration executive order is definitely a good thing. When you look at the details of it, it was very reasonable. In fact, if anything, it was a little bit too conservative, but he did that for a reason. And I actually agreed with him on that because it was a way to shield himself from all potential criticism and all potential attempts to torpedo it. Because what he did is he looked at, like Ronald Reagan, for example, did amnesty when he was in office. The Republicans didn't give a shit because it's Ronald Reagan. So when St. Reagan does something, everybody shut the fuck up. So he basically looked at Ronald Reagan's template and was like, I'm going to copy that, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to give people a path to citizenship. What we do is anybody who's a criminal, anybody who's committed a felony, we're going to deport them. But if you're somebody who's been here and you're working hard and you've established a life here, yeah, we're going to give you a path to citizenship. Of course we're going to do that. So totally reasonable. He did this only after Congress wouldn't do dick. So he was like, oh, you're not going to do anything? Okay, well, then I'm going to do something. So it's now currently tied up in the courts, and it looks like they may have killed it. But in terms of the action he did, if I was president, I would have done a similar action. You try to go through Congress, Okay, it doesn't work through Congress. Well, then I'm going to do a similar thing that other presidents have done via executive order or executive action. Hey, here's immigration reform. And it was a very moderate proposal, and overall I agree with it, and I definitely put this under his positive category. And remember, this came in the second term after many people were upset after the first term, including myself, because he was acting in many ways too centrist, too conservative, too corporatist, too establishment. And then at some point in the second term, he decided to turn the heat up a little bit and get a little bit more progressive. So definitely a good thing, the immigration executive order. He also rejected the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, that's a good thing, and this is something that a lot of people didn't think he was going to do. In fact, I don't think I thought he was going to do it because, Obama is an insider, and he plays ball. And he'll work with Wall Street. He'll work with the establishment. And this was an instance of him basically snubbing his nose at the establishment and saying, we're not going to do that. And I think this one has a lot to do with his record. He actually cares about his legacy. He doesn't want to be remembered as a president that pushed us further down the wrong path when it comes to climate change. So this was a little something he could do where you get a check in the positive box and a positive check for your legacy, and all you're doing is slapping down one pipeline. So I don't want to downplay it because, again, it's a good thing. I would have done the exact same thing if I was president, and he deserves credit for slapping down the Keystone XL pipeline. We all know if it was a Republican in there, 100% they sign off on it, no question. No question. He also rejected the Dakota Access Pipeline. It's another great one. That was a big story very recently. Who knows what the hell is going to happen now that Donald Trump is going to become president of the United States. But for him to stand up, now he did it really late on in the process, and really the people who deserve the credit are the protesters and the water protectors, because they were out there busting ass But that's how popular movements work. If you have somebody who's even like a 5% or 10% ally in a position of power, and you really, really bust ass to let them know, like, hey, this ain't happening. This isn't happening. Well, then maybe they'll be receptive enough to say, you know, this has become a big issue. Let's not do it. And that's what happened in this case. So the real credit goes to the protesters. But yes, Obama said no Dakota Access Pipeline. You have to give credit where credit is due. I filed that under the good category. Then we get to, this one's a strong move. And this happened just recently, too. He banned offshore oil drilling in a bunch of places. I think in the Arctic is one, and in another area, too. I'm forgetting exactly where it was. But a very, very large swath of water. Now there's no offshore oil drilling allowed there. Now, on this one, skeptics might say, yeah, but Kyle, he did it at the end of his time in office, and then you're just going to have Trump come in and reverse it. That's actually not true. When you read the details of the story, you find out that he did it through a previous law that allows a president to do it, and it is not so easy to reverse. So if Trump tries to reverse it, then he's going to have to go to court and try to make a case in court to allow himself to do it. So in other words, it's not as simple as Obama does it, Trump comes in on day one, he can change it. He can't. He's got to go through a court process if he wants to change it. So it actually was a bold move for Obama to say, yeah, you know what, offshore oil drilling, no more. Now, obviously, the rest of the time in office, when he was in office earlier, he allowed offshore oil drilling. So you definitely file that under the negative category. But in terms of what he ended up doing recently, again, you got to give credit where credit is due. There's no way a Republican president would have done that, and Obama did do it, so file that under the good category. Furthermore, he, I mean, this one's obvious, killed Osama bin Laden. Now, I'm sure there are conspiracies out there that he didn't. I think there's enough evidence to indicate that he did. And there are progressive concerns about this one, obviously, when it comes to due process, when it comes to declaration of war, when it comes to national sovereignty, because they went to Pakistan to do it. And if it didn't work, it would have been an utter disaster. But it's hard to not file that under the good category when you take this terrorist who was responsible for the deaths of thousands of Americans and you get him. And this is somebody who the Bush administration had been looking for endlessly. And, you know, seemingly all Americans wanted this guy's head on a platter. So I'm going to have to put this under the positive section on national consensus alone, because if you do a poll on this one, it'll be like, what, certainly over 80% of the American people are like, yeah, fuck yeah, they got bin Laden. And I'm happy he's gone too. Let me be clear about that. But I do understand the procedural concerns and the due process concerns from progressives. But on national consensus alone, you got to say, look, that – put that under the positive category, Bin Laden is gone. He also cut the deficit in half, another positive thing. This is something that conservatives never give him credit for, because what they'll do is this very misleading measure where they say, oh, forget about the deficit, let's talk about the debt. Now, the debt is what? The debt is the accumulation of the annual deficit since the beginning of the United States of America existing. So it's the total accumulation of the money that we owe to other nations. The debt is high under every president, period. Period. So to use that as the measure is a little misleading. If you go by the annual deficit, it makes more sense, because that's, okay, for this year that you were in power, how much are you in the red? So George W. Bush's last year in office, he handed off a $1.4 trillion deficit to Barack Obama. Barack Obama has cut that to about $600 billion. So, I mean, look, if you're a conservative, if you're a libertarian, if you're a deficit hawk, whatever, that's something that you got to go, all right, you did it. Now, that's something, again, progressives aren't even necessarily happy about the cutting the deficit thing, because if you believe in Keynesian economics or you believe in the MMT school of thought, well, then the idea is, hey, deficit spending is actually good for the private sector and good for the economy in general. So there are a lot of progressives who might not even be happy about that. But again, on national consensus alone, in terms of how they would feel knowing the facts that he cut the deficit, the American people would go, oh, that's great. So file that under the positive category. He doubled the market. This is a big one. Now, I don't care much about this, because the market is not a good indication of how average people, your average Joe, regular folks, everyday Americans are doing. The stock market is a better indication of how the rich are doing. But remember, it's Republicans who always claim that this is a big indicator for how good a president is. Did the market go up or did the market go down? So here you have a president who doubled the market. They won't give him credit for it. Again, if you poll the American people, I think most of them would say generally, hey, that's a good thing. So you put that under the positive category. Next on the list of good is Dodd-Frank. Now, this one is a mixed picture, and it's very complicated. Me personally, overall, I don't like it. And I don't like it because it is super duper duper weak, and it's riddled with loopholes, and it largely allows Wall Street to go back to what they were doing right before the crash. So in reality, this is one of those pieces of legislation that I would honestly file under both, good and bad. So the good aspects of it are it is 100% preferable to doing nothing. If you got no Wall Street regulation passed, we would have probably already had our second crash. So doing nothing is just eons worse than doing even weak regulation. So you get the credit because you did something, you did some regulation, but obviously in the negative category is it's so goddamn weak that you didn't address the fundamental problems in the system. So this one's a mixed picture. It's both good and bad. But because, again, if you were to have a Republican president in there, there's no way they would have done any new regulation. And I don't want to overstate it because there are definitely important provisions in Dodd-Frank that if we didn't have them, we would be in a world of hurt much worse than we're in right now. So this is both good and bad, but as of right now, we're discussing the good category, so you got to toss in Dodd-Frank. Now, furthermore, the next one in the good category, this is one that me personally, I like this. I know a lot of my audience might not like it, so you could put this under your negative category to each their own. But for me, I like this, and I think it's because on some issues I'm more moderate or more conservative than a lot of the progressives who might listen to my show. But I like the fact that he cut small business taxes over a dozen times, and that was in his first term alone. He may have even done some of that in the second term. I've often said on the show, I've never seen a middle class or poor tax cut that I didn't like. So I'm a progressive through and through, but I'm of the belief that if you're middle class or poor, you should be taxed at a really low rate, and you should get a lot for the money that you're paying. There are a lot of other progressives who would say, well, no, I wouldn't cut the taxes. I would keep their taxes as they are, maybe even raise them a little bit, but I'd also give them stuff for what they're doing. I'm a big fan of reallocating the resources in the budget. So a lot of the shit that we spend on subsidies for corporate welfare, or we give to Wall Street, or we do for the military-industrial complex, I would take a lot of that money and reallocate it towards social programs and for the people. And that would basically free it up so that you can do a tax cut for middle-class people and lower-class people. So for me, I file that under a positive, that he cut small business taxes over 12 times. Again, I like it when you cut taxes for the people who actually need the tax cuts as opposed to the rich. I know some progressives disagree with me, but this is my list, not yours, so you do it however you want to do it, but in my estimation, I like that. All right, now, then we get to the other angle. He raised taxes on those making $400,000 and above. The details are get a little bit more nuanced than that, so I think it's like for couples, it's $400,000 and above for single individuals, it's $450,000 or above. And what he did is he took the rates, which were Bush's rates, 35%, the top marginal rate being 35%, he raised it to about 39%. So he went back to the Clinton rates, and he did it for people making $400,000 or $450,000 and above. So it's a tax increase on the richest 1% or maybe top 2%. That's what it is. It's a very little one, and it's only the marginal rate, but it's a little bit of a tax increase on the top. But you got to give credit where credit is due. He campaigned on raising it for people making over $250,000. In negotiations with the Republicans at the last minute, he was able to get $400,000 and $450,000 and above. But he did get a tax increase on the rich. In my opinion, it wasn't enough. But you still got to file that under the positive category because, again, it's significantly better than if it was a Republican president and they would go the opposite direction and they'd probably cut it to the Ronald Reagan rates. Remember that 28% for the rich, the top marginal rate? So file that under positive. He ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's, you know, a step in the right direction for equality and justice for the LGBTQ community. He brought back stem cell research. This is a big one. It's big because there's a big difference between having an administration that just generally speaking believes in science and an administration that doesn't care, and they're ideologues, and they cater to Christian fundamentalists and social conservatives, which, of course, is backwards and sends us in the wrong direction. He came out in favor of gay marriage. Now, this one, you know, you decide whether or not you want to give him credit for this. To me, that's such an obvious thing, and it's a duh thing. Like, yeah, treat people equally. Duh. But he came out before the Supreme Court did their decision. He was the first sitting president to come out and say, yeah, I believe in gay marriage, and I want to let everybody know that. He didn't have a legislative role to play because it was the Supreme Court that made the decision ultimately. But I don't know. You decide if you want to put that in the positive category or not. I tend to lean more towards just focus on the policy stuff that he gave us and that he pushed for and that he signed. And this is not that. So weigh that as you deem fit. Next one is similar to Dodd-Frank because it's both. It's both good and bad. I'm, of course, talking about Obamacare. So Obamacare, again, the positive angle of it is significantly better than if you did absolutely nothing. So in other words, if Republicans were in there and we did nothing, we would all be worse off. I think prices would be higher. Fewer people would be covered. There's no doubt about that. We'd have 30 million fewer people covered. There'd be still be a pre-existing conditions problem. Kids would still be kicked off of their parents' rolls when they're younger as opposed to now it's when they're 26 years old. The ratio of how much insurance companies spend on overhead versus care would be out of whack still. It was like 50-50 in some cases, where insurance companies would spend 50% of their money on overhead and bullshit and only 50% on care. There's a rule in Obamacare that's got to be like 70 or 80% or something like that of the money has to be spent on care. So there's a lot of good provisions, really good provisions in Obamacare. In fact, the only one that's disliked, the Medicaid expansion, for example, is a great provision. The only one that's disliked is the individual mandate. That's the only part that the American people are like, ugh, gross. So it's good because we moved in the right direction in a lot of ways. It's bad because you didn't give us single payer and you had a fucking supermajority. You didn't even give us a public option. So it's a milquetoast neoliberal kind of reform that copied right-wing think tanks because they're the ones who came up with the idea of the individual mandate. Richard Nixon back in the day proposed a similar plan. Bob Dole proposed a similar plan in 1996. So the fact that you push something that Newt Gingrich supported, Chuck Grassley supported in the 90s, is a little bit ridiculous. Again, you get credit because it's better than nothing, but I hate it because you had a supermajority, you could have done better, and you chose not to do better. So that one is a little bit of a mixed bag. But yes, because you covered way more people and you had a lot of positive provisions, we do have to put that in the good category for what it's worth. All right. Now, of course, as I'm talking to you, my camera angle just like fucking fell off a cliff. So hold on one second. I'm going to keep talking to you, but I will be fixing the camera angle and you should be aware of that. I think you guys can tell how much effort was put into this thing, though, because how many policy things have we discussed? Okay, there we go. Camera's better. Hey, like them apples. Where was I? Obamacare, right? That was a good one to break on because it's easy to remember. I said it before, I'll say it again. This chair that I sit in, even though, remember the big old pillow cushion chair? It's good that that's gone, but Jesus, it is hard to shimmy into place in this bad boy. This is more of a stool than a chair. You like the intermission to talk about something like that? That's what I do. Okay, where was I? Obamacare. Boom. All right, let's do it. Keep going. All right, next is one of my personal favorites. In his last term, specifically in his last year or two, he's gone wild freeing nonviolent drug offenders. In fact, it's been so overwhelmingly positive that he broke the record for numbers of pardons and commutations done by a president. This is one where there is no equivocation, there is no nuance or hedging. This is one where I unironically say, thank you, Obama. Because again, he didn't have to do it. A Republican president never would have done it. But what Obama's effectively doing is he's going over every single case. Every single case of a nonviolent drug offender that he has the time for is crossing his desk. He's reading their story, and he's determining, should this person be freed or not? Now, me personally, I would free every single nonviolent drug offender in the country within my power, so every federal one. The state one you don't have the authority to do, but I would try to put pressure on the states to do it and threaten funding, for example, for various things. He's not as balls to the wall as I am, but he's Obama, so what do you expect? But the fact that you broke the record for pardons and commutations of nonviolent drug offenders, that's just a wonderful thing. That's just a wonderful thing. So that's great. Then we get to another one of my personal favorites, which has now recently been in jeopardy, but the Iran deal. The Iran deal is one that the right wing is going to malign and spit at and hate, but they are just 100% incorrect, and most of them are liars about what's in the deal, or they just don't know what the fuck they're talking about because they don't know what's in the deal. So in the Iran deal, it's a very simple deal. Iran has to allow the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, which is the wing of the UN that looks into nuclear stuff, basically. They need to allow them in, and they get to inspect all of their nuclear sites. And they're only allowed to enrich uranium to a point where they use it for power for their power grid, for their people, or for scientific research. So in other words, they're not allowed to make a bomb, and even if they were to make a bomb, the breakout period and how long it would take them to enrich to that point would be a while. So that was the deal. You can't have a nuclear weapons program. The IAEA lives up your ass to try to find out what you're doing at all times, and all we have to do in response is give them back their own money. That's it. Give them back their own money. We kidnap their money. We give back their own money. So that's wins across the board. They're happy because their economy gets better because we're giving them back their own money, which we stole, and you cut off their path to a nuke. So Israel should be thanking us. The region should be thanking us. Saudi Arabia should be thanking us. But no, of course, they're spitting in our eye, and they want to be more hawkish and more standoffish with Iran, even though they should be sending us flowers and chocolates. So the Iran deal was great. Now, recently, the fucking Congress re-upped the sanctions bill on them because they're a bunch of fucking idiots. And then they say, oh, no, but it's just symbolic. Yeah, try to explain that to them. It's cool, we're sanctioning you, even though we had one job not to sanction you again. That's part of the deal, but okay, we're going to sanction you. And then Iran's responding in kind, and now there's an escalation, and Obama signed, or I'm not sure if he signed it or vetoed it, and then they overrode it. But whatever the case is, you've had the deal now is in jeopardy. And, of course, with Trump coming in, it's an even bigger jeopardy. But in terms of was this the right thing to do, yes. And I would even go as far as saying with the Iran deal, if I was president, I don't think – there's no way I could have crafted a better deal than that. It was just the perfect deal, the perfect peace deal you could have made. And so he gets a lot of credit for the Iran deal, one of his best things. The Cuba deal is the next one. Again, one of his best things. So the Cuba deal – one of the upsides of that, which nobody talks about, which drives me crazy that nobody talks about it, is Cuba, in response to us opening up our lines of communication with them, they've decided to legalize small businesses. That's huge. Cuba, it wasn't legal to have small businesses in Cuba because it's basically a communist island and everything is central command, central control. It's a centralized economy. So after opening up the lines of communication with the U.S. and talking with Obama and us using negotiations instead of continuing the same thing that didn't work for all those goddamn years, now they've legalized small businesses and they're moving more in the direction of liberalizing their economy. So I think that's great. When you look, relatively speaking, at the abuses of the Cuban government versus some of our top allies, Cuba's crimes are not nearly as bad. I mean, Saudi Arabia's crimes are way worse than Cuba, for example. So this idea of, like, you know, let's keep trying the thing that doesn't work for a government that's a lot, you know, less evil than some of our top allies, it just doesn't make sense. So I think Obama was 100% right in doing the Cuba deal, and he deserves a lot of credit, and he especially deserves credit for getting a lot of the positive changes, getting the ball rolling on the positive changes there. So credit for the Cuba deal completely. Another one of my favorites, the overtime rules. So it used to be the case that if you make $23,000 a year or less, you get overtime by law. The Obama administration upped that to $47,000 a year or less. So that's a lot of people who are going to make more money who need that money. And this is an example of helping workers in a real concrete way that means something in their lives, and you did it by doing effective, smart policy. So again, I love that one. Now, unfortunately, this one too has kind of hit a snag in the court system, and it looks like it might get slapped down. And even if it doesn't get slapped down in the courts, we all know President Trump. This is one where it's gone because he owns a lot of hotels too, and this actually affects him where he's going to have to pay more to these people. So this thing is gone, but it was the right thing to do. It was the right policy to do, and it would have helped a lot of people. Then we move on to how Obama saved GM. Now, it's a complex – everything that happened in the fallout of the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession is it's a mixed bag. But one of the things I put in the positive category is saving GM. That, I think, was the right move. And now looking back in retrospect, it definitely was the right move because it worked out. It worked out. The end result was overwhelmingly positive. And how many people – I mean, could you imagine what the economy would look like if GM failed? You cringe at the thought of it. So many more people would have lost their jobs. There would have been so much more desperation. I mean, you saved many lives and livelihoods by bailing out GM, and that wasn't an easy decision. That, I mean, there, you know, it's documented as to what was going on behind the scenes there. Not all of Obama's advisors thought it was a good idea, but Obama said, no, we're going to do this thing. So total credit for saving GM. Then we get to the Paris Agreement. Now, the Paris Agreement, I wish it was a formal deal. So an agreement is more of a, okay, we'll uphold it, you uphold it, but it's not written on paper, and it's not codified into, like, international law, and it's not as sacred, although that's not the right word. It's not as concrete as an actual deal. That's why they call it the agreement. But what this shows is there's a president who understands science, believes in climate science, and is willing to try to attempt to do the right thing. And having the Paris Agreement is much better than not having it. Now I think, President ferret on his head, Trump, is going to take us in the wrong direction for that too. Obviously, he called it a Chinese hoax, and he just doesn't believe in science. But the Paris Agreement was definitely the right thing to do. I would have tried to go further, but you put that in the positive category for sure. Having the Paris Agreement is way better than not having it. He also did new pollution regulations with the EPA. There were coal regulations as part of that and pollution regulations. We covered that. You know, that doesn't get the credit it deserves because one of the facts that I learned there is one of the downsides of having that pollution is thousands more people die. Like, people die from breathing the shitty air over an extended period of time. So these regulations actually saved lives as opposed to just cleaning up the atmosphere and the air and the water and all that stuff. So those new pollution regulations for the EPA, overwhelmingly positive. Another one of the positive things, the stimulus package. The stimulus package had some downsides. They caved too much and gave too much of the package as tax cuts. But a lot of that stimulus package was good, and it helped, and it worked, because look at what happened, the position we were in when Obama came into office, where we were losing 800,000 jobs a month and on the brink of a depression, and look at what happened after his various rounds of, policy goals and implementations, one of them being the stimulus package. The stimulus package definitely put in the positive category, along with the bailout of GM, because it worked. It worked, and it helped out regular people a good amount. And now I get to the two of the biggest reasons, two of the biggest positive things that Obama did. In his time in office, there's been a net creation of over 12 million private sector jobs. That's good. That's good. Now, the downside of that is a lot of those jobs, they were higher-paying jobs, and then you had Bush's gigantic recession, and then these jobs that are created in place of those jobs are more lower-paying jobs. So you got to get all the facts out there and call it exactly like it is. And that's not good that the jobs are lower-paying jobs, obviously. But the fact that there have been over 12 million jobs created in his time in office, when the previous administration, there was actually a net loss of jobs under George W. Bush in the private sector, which is almost unheard of. Like, Jimmy Carter is maligned as this shitty president. There was a net job creation of like over a million jobs under Jimmy Carter. Bush lost over 600,000 jobs in the private sector when he was president. That's like unheard of. It's unbelievable. So Obama creating over 12 million jobs, you have to give credit for that. I mean, again, they should be higher paying jobs. I wish they were higher paying jobs. I would have tried to foster policies that made them higher paying jobs, but they're jobs nonetheless, and that number is an important number, and it could have been a lot worse is the point, which brings me to the most important point. Yes, Obama and his administration, for all their faults, and believe me, I'm about to get to their faults, but they stopped the depression. So we were losing 800,000 jobs a month under George W. Bush. We were on the brink of an out-and-out depression. That's why they call it the Great Recession, the subprime mortgage crisis, the utter collapse of our financial institutions. The stimulus package, the bailout of GM, and some of the other policies and initiatives they took really did prevent a potential depression from happening. So you have just one of the worst presidents in U.S. history who came before him, George W. Bush. And then this guy comes in, and even though Obama is like a centrist, corporatist, milquetoast neoliberal who pisses us all off on so many different issues, call it like it is, man. We were on the brink of depression, and then we were no longer on the brink of depression. So that's a fact. It's a fucking fact. It's a fucking fact. Brink of depression, no longer on the brink of depression, dug us out of that hole of the Great Recession. So that's all the good. So that was me sitting down, researching, going off the things I knew already when it came to policy about Obama. That's all the good. We're what, 30 minutes into the show or so? Maybe a little more, 33-ish? That's the good that I ascertained. Maybe I'm missing little things here and there. Certainly positive. Who knows? Maybe I blanked and missed a big one. It happens. I'm not perfect. But that's the good of President Obama. There's a lot there. There is a lot there. Keep it real. Now we go to the bad. Buckle up. Under President Obama, Flint, Michigan still has no clean water. That's inexcusable. Now, you can blame the Republican governor, Republican state legislature, bad, 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 Republican, Republican, Republican. You're the president. You're the president. You're in control of FEMA. I would stop at nothing until not only they temporarily have clean water and you're like, hey, here's some bottled water that you get for free, and bathe with that. No. I would do whatever I had to do, whatever I do in my power, and I do it immediately to get them clean water and redo the infrastructure to make sure you never have a problem like this again. It's a massive undertaking, but the second we learned about the crisis, the ball should have been rolling on day one. On day one. And fuck the governor. Fuck him. You say step aside, bitch. You don't know what you're doing. You're a sellout bitch is what you are. That's what you are. He gave so much in tax cuts to the rich, while people don't even have clean drinking water in Flint. Are you kidding me? So you immediately address that. I do file this under the negative category for him. You could try to say, oh, man, it ain't his fault. How would we all act if it was Flint that had no clean water? And it's not just Flint, it's other places in the U.S. that don't have clean water. How would we react if that was the case under George W. Bush? We'd all say, what are you doing about it? Do something about it, asshole. What are you doing? You're the president. Under Obama, it's the same thing. So Flint still has no clean water. The second thing, our infrastructure still has a grade of D from the Society of Civil Engineers. They release a report on this every couple of years. We're supposed to be the richest country in the world, and oh my God, everybody should envy us and look up to us, and America's so great, and freedom and democracy, and we got our shit together. Your infrastructure gets a grade of D. Now, again, this is one where people go, Republican obstruction, Republican obstruction, Republican obstruction. You didn't fight hard enough. You didn't fight at all to do a new deal. I give you credit for the stimulus package. I give you credit for the GM bailout. You didn't do a new deal. You didn't really go, you know, full speed ahead towards we're doing an infrastructure project and that's the end of the conversation and we're going to get this thing done come hell or high water. You didn't flex muscle. You didn't twist arms. You didn't do what FDR would have done or maybe even Lyndon Johnson would have done because it's not in you. So we have an infrastructure with a grade of D in the United States of America. You know, again, under Bush, we all would have said, what the fuck is wrong with you? Do an infrastructure bill, you prick. Under Obama, same thing. Do a fucking infrastructure bill. Do something. Do something. We can't have a D for our infrastructure. That's crazy. Another negative. He broke the record for deportations. Now, look, this is another issue where I think I'm more of a centrist than a lot of people in my audience. So, in other words, me personally, I have zero problems with deporting criminals. If somebody's a criminal, I don't care. Get out. Get out. I'm not gonna. If you're a criminal and you're here illegally, I'm not gonna go, oh, it's cool. Here, let's give you a comfy life. Fuck off. Get out. I don't care. But there's a big difference between just deporting criminals. And to be clear, I don't mean criminals as in like, oh, you cross the border, so you are by definition a criminal. That's not what I mean. There's a big difference between just deporting criminals or doing what Obama did, which is breaking the record for deportations. That's a fucking right-wing move through and through. Through and through. I'm sure there were many kids in those deportations. And now Obama's out there saying, you know, if Trump starts deporting kids, I don't know if I could sit on the sideline. You've been doing this shit. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? So, and there was a, you remember the crisis a while ago? Like, oh my God, all these kids are coming from El Salvador and Guatemala and they're coming through Mexico and what are we going to do? And it was like a thing. Like, people were like, oh, like scandal. It's not a scandal. They're fucking children. Of course you do the right thing by children. What are you, crazy? What are you going to send them back to war-torn countries? Some of those countries have a higher death rate and a higher murder rate than the war in Iraq when it was at its height. So the drug war is a literal war and it's raging. You're going to send them back to a war zone? How fucking callous are you? What are you, crazy? So deporting a record number of people, not okay. That's a flat-out right-wing move. That's a right-wing move. Then we go to this one should get under everybody's skin, not just progressives, not just liberals, everybody in the country. He's been a cheerleader for TPP. The TPP is not even close. It's not even a close call. According to the Economic Policy Institute, we lose hundreds of thousands of jobs, if not over a million jobs. You allow in the deal Malaysia, who, quote, tolerates slavery. So you want to reward a nation that's tolerating slavery. Thank you, oh progressive leader. You want to allow in Brunei, who just implemented Sharia law in 2014. Way to go. As you claim to believe in freedom and democracy, you're giving a giant pat on the back to a country that just implemented Sharia. And the problems are endless with it, man. It's going to drive down wages, outsource more jobs, and he wants to do it because China. Oh, my God, China, and they're going to do their own trade deal, and it's going to be the worst, so we need to do the fucked up thing before they do the fucked up thing. It just shows he, at his heart, in many ways, he's a neoliberal corporatist. Then, for those of you who say, okay, well, he tried to get the TPP, but he didn't. And so you can't necessarily put that in the negative column, but you can because it was his intent. But furthermore, it's not like he didn't sign trade deals. He signed a trade deal with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama. And especially the ones with Colombia and Panama more specifically, That thing is about nothing but corporate tax dodging and doing favors for his rich donors. That's all that is. That's all that is. So Obama, when he ran against Hillary Clinton in 08 in the primary, pointed out, she didn't have to. That's what she did, and she shouldn't have done it, and it was terrible, and everybody should know that, and vote for me. I'm not an outsourcer. I don't do these dumbass trade deals. Yes, you did. South Korea, Colombia, Panama, and you were pushing for TPP. Unquestionably a negative thing. And this shows, again, neoliberal corporatist garbage. He also expanded NSA spying. If you're a liberal or a progressive and you're not mad at him for this, you're not a liberal or a progressive. Because, that again, that's not a close one. It's not like, well, you know, hey, should we be in favor or against the NSA collecting everybody's metadata and spying on everyone? No, under Bush, we all fucking, our hair was on fire, rightfully so, because he was spying on everybody and collecting everybody's information. You know what that means? There's no more Fourth Amendment. There's no more protection from unreasonable search and seizure, and there's no more call for a specific warrant to describe a specific person, place, or thing to be searched. That's all out the window. Obama didn't fix that when he came in office. He made it worse. He put it on steroids. There is more NSA spying. He left Gitmo open. Again, this is one where people are going to say, but Republicans, but Republicans, but Republicans. Let me be crystal clear and make it as concise as possible. That which can be opened extrajudicially can be shut down extrajudicially. So in other words, that is outside the realm of the law. Hey, we're going to set up this prison which is not abiding by U.S. law, U.S. standards, the Constitution, and it's not abiding by the Geneva Conventions and the Nuremberg Tribunal and international law. So they set it up outside the law, and then they get mad when you want to shut it down. Are you kidding me? You set it up outside the law, so fine, I'll shut it down outside the law. I don't give a fuck. Take me to court. I don't give a shit. The fact that it's still open, I cannot forgive. Now, to be more clear about this and give all the details, what Obama has done is he's kept it open, but he's gradually released the people to different places, made deals with different places and released them. And understand, the overwhelming majority of people at Guantanamo are not terrorists. There's been endless reporting on this. You don't see it much in U.S. media, gee, I wonder why, but you see it all the time. There's a big article in The Guardian about this. We cut deals, the Bush administration cut deals with warlords in Afghanistan and Pakistan to send us Al-Qaeda. And they didn't send us Al-Qaeda. They just sent us people who were their enemies. And then Cheney and Bush were like, I don't know. They say they're Al-Qaeda. I guess they're Al-Qaeda. So we tortured innocent people. There were German citizens who we tortured who we eventually had to release and be like, whoops, our bad. So it's still open, though. That's the problem. And another thing he could have done is veto the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, which authorizes the funding for Guantanamo. It does a million other things, too. But if he vetoes it and says, I'm not going to sign this until you get out the funding for Guantanamo and shut it down. He could have done that. He didn't do it. And he threatened to do it multiple times. I'm going to veto it. I'm going to veto it. I'm going to veto it. And then he never vetoed it. So, yes, he could have done a lot more on Gitmo, and he didn't. Then you have the Wall Street bailout. So in his response to the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession, bailing out GM, absolutely the right thing to do. The stimulus package, the right thing to do. I could have been a lot more progressive, but overall you put it in the positive category. It was the right thing to do, and it worked. The bailout of Wall Street, no. No, 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 no. That's totally different, and that was wrong, okay? They made the decisions that bankrupted their companies. You want to talk about bootstraps. You want to talk about capitalism. Why is it that when they fuck up, they get socialism all day long? When the people fuck up, they don't. There wasn't a bailout of the homeowners during the subprime mortgage crisis. They bailed out the companies that did the trickery and deceit and predatory contracts that got them into that situation. They bailed out the crooks. They bailed out the criminals. And they did it because of campaign contributions. There's no way Obama or any other president would have done that if it wasn't for the fact that those financial institutions have a direct line to him because they gave him money when he ran his campaign. So let's be crystal clear about that. So this isn't a close one. The bailout of Wall Street is not a close one. That's flat-out corruption, open corruption, in-your-face corruption. There was no argument to bail them out, but they bailed them out. Bush started, he did a bailout of them. Obama did the same goddamn thing and did more. So saving GM, the right thing. Stimulus, the right thing. The bailout of Wall Street, fuck no. Fuck no. If you wanted to do a bailout in that respect, you bail out the people. You bail out the homeowners who ran into trouble, not the financial institution. Okay. He didn't prosecute any torturers. You're coming off an administration which is full of torturers and war criminals. You know, we look forward. We don't look backwards. Excuse you? We look forward. We don't look backwards. Hey, Obama, you do know that every crime, by definition, happens in the past. Could you imagine, like, a murderer, fucking Dylan Roof, who was just found guilty the other day? His defense lawyer is like, all right, look, I just want to make this clear. We look forward, we don't look backwards, so don't worry about this, the murder of 9 people he did. Everybody be like, that, there's no logic there. That is literally one of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. The Nuremberg trials with the Nazis. Look, we should look forward. We should look. Himmler once told me it's wise to look forward and not look backwards. So all the fucking gas chambers we did and all the massacring and slaughtering of Jews and gypsies and everybody that we did. No, that's one of the craziest things I've ever heard. But he said it, and he believed it, and he didn't prosecute anybody in the Bush administration. Unbelievable. He also had a supermajority. So now we get back to Obamacare. I said it's both good and bad. Here's the bad part of it. He had a supermajority and didn't get single payer. Now, he would argue, whoa. I couldn't because we had Blue Dog Democrats who stood in the way. So that's Democrats from Republican states who try to be more centrist to get reelected. But again, this is the fundamental problem with Obama, is that he doesn't know how to pull an FDR or an LBJ, which is you call them into your office, the Democrats who are standing in your way, even though you have a supermajority, and you say, look, here's the deal. If you don't vote for single payer, the DNC is going to primary you and pump money into your opponent, and then I will personally come down there and campaign for your opponent over you. So in other words, you vote for the bill, and you are much more likely to get reelected. If you vote against it, you're not getting reelected. It's over. We'll do everything in our power to make sure you don't get reelected. You could do that with all the blue dogs who are standing in the way. And you could even do that with some of the Republicans from liberal states who feel like they have to be more centrist in order to get elected again. So that's how you do it. You twist their arm. You say, this is what's going to happen. And you could have done that with single payer. Not only did you not do it with single payer, you didn't even do it with a public option. And you caved all the way to the Republican idea, the right-wing idea, what used to be the right-wing idea, which is the individual mandate system. Bob Dole's plan, Mitt Romney's plan, right-wing think tank plan, Richard Nixon's plan, Newt Gingrich liked it in the 90s. So it's better than nothing, which is why, again, you give credit, a little bit of credit for him doing anything, but you could have done a lot more, and you didn't do it. You didn't do it. He didn't even try to get free college. This is supposed to be like a staple of Democratic politics. Like, oh, we believe in education. So right now we have elementary school, middle school, high school funded by tax dollars. Nobody thinks that that's radical or crazy. In fact, it's viewed as kind of like, yeah, it's just a normal, we're civilized people. Of course we do that. But we stop at higher education. Why not try to do a free college bill? Didn't even consider it. Didn't cross his mind, never said a goddamn word about it. Obama didn't even get a minimum wage increase. Now, this is one where, again, I get it kind of a little bit. For most of his time in office, you could say, hey, it's the Republican opposition is the problem. But again, there was a time where you had a supermajority and you didn't fucking get it. So, and how hard is it to make that case to the American people? 80% of them agree with you. So you can use the bully pulpit and strong-arm the Republicans to get it done and at least have one or two of them cave, but you didn't. You didn't do it. Because he didn't push that hard for it. So the minimum wage is still not a living wage under a president who was supposed to be a revolutionary, hope and change, liberal Democrat who's going to bring real reform. But the minimum wage is still not a living wage. He didn't legalize weed or change the scheduling of it. He could have changed the scheduling like that. He could have said, look, you're the DEA. I'm in charge of you. And here's what's going to happen. You're going to change the scheduling from Schedule 1. Even if you just did Schedule 2, I'd give you credit, but it shouldn't even be Schedule 2. It should be one of the lowest fucking schedules. It shouldn't even be on the list at all. It should be totally legal across the country. But you didn't legalize it. You didn't push for it. You didn't change the scheduling, which you could have done. Now, again, credit for him releasing all the nonviolent drug offenders, but the problem is now the next administration still has the leeway and the ability to crack down on marijuana because you didn't cut off their path to do that. You didn't legalize it or change the scheduling, which would have put pressure on them and made it much harder for them to crack down if they wanted to. Now they have free rein. They can do whatever the fuck they want. Obama gave Israel $38 billion, mostly in military aid, and Israel turned around and expanded settlements and expanded occupation and continued apartheid and continued oppressing the Palestinians. Not only that, he rearmed Netanyahu in the middle of his bomb fest in Gaza, which killed a minimum 80% civilians. That's insanity. Like, this guy's committing fucking war crimes left and right, and you're like, great, let me get you some more weapons. That's nuts, man. That's crazy. Supposed to be a liberal. He gave Saudi Arabia billions of dollars in weapons. Saudi Arabia is massacring women and children in Yemen. By some counts, over 50% of the people they're killing are innocent. Over 50%. And we know that, and we're still refueling their planes and giving them coordinates on the map. And by the way, Saudi Arabia has attacked hospitals, schools, open-air markets, mosques, and it's all with U.S. weapons. And they say, there's reports on the ground, you can see Made in the USA on the the shellings that are there that just destroyed the local market or just destroyed the school or a hospital. So, gee, I wonder if you're radicalizing more people. Of course you are. You're arming Wahhabi maniacs. Saudi Arabia is a terror state. They have the same ideology as ISIS. There's some journalists who rightly call them ISIS that made it, and they're one of our top allies. They call all atheists terrorists. They behead people in the public square. You know, they do it for sorcery and witchcraft. Women are treated as second-class citizens. They're covered up in public. They're not allowed to go anywhere without a guardian or without permission. I mean, it's such an extreme state, and we're still close with them. And there was no attempt to move in the other direction or untie relationships or sanction or just stop arming them. You're still fucking arming them. Okay, more. He did a drone strike on a 16-year-old American citizen. The drone strikes alone are bad enough because you droned Pakistani weddings, Yemeni weddings. You've killed many civilians. They claim they've only killed, like, I don't know, 12 or some insanely low number. There are independent journalists who say, actually, no, it's probably in the thousands. So you're killing civilians with this drone warfare, but one of the people you killed was a 16-year-old American citizen. Now, they claimed it's okay, it was an accident, we were targeting a terrorist who was with them. Come to find out just recently, no, that guy's still alive. So they killed Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki, and then when they asked Robert Gibbs about it, who was in the Obama administration at the time, what did Robert Gibbs say? He said, he should have had a better father. So progressive, so liberal. We kill the families of terrorists. We always rant against Trump for saying out loud, we have to take out their families. We have to take out their families. This is what Robert Gibbs said too, and that's what Obama did with the drone strike of Abdul Rahman. So, do you realize the precedent that sets? And now there's no accountability for that. So now any president could bomb an American civilian with a drone and nothing happens. Nothing happens. No due process, no constitutional protections, no human rights. So think about that, just destroys the fabric of the country and what the Constitution is supposed to represent and what fucking Magna Carta is supposed to represent and the Geneva Conventions. Again, supposed to be a liberal Democrat. He also made most of the Bush tax cuts permanent. Now, this one I was hesitant to put on the list because, to be fair, the ones he made permanent were for people, more middle-class people and poor people. So, again, I'm a little more centrist on this than a lot of people in my audience. I love tax cuts for middle-class people and poor people because I think they need the money. I would tax the rich a hell of a lot more, but I think middle-class people and poor people need the money. So I was hesitant to put this on the list. But I'm honestly putting it on the list, again, because of what I think the national consensus is, where if you talk to most people in the country, they'll be like, yeah, he shouldn't have done that. And it was another cave to Republicans, to be clear. And then finally, I think the worst of the worst that we have here. We're still in the war in Iraq. He promised to end it. He briefly ended it, / not really, went right back in. So we're still in the war in Iraq, an endless fucking war. It started in 2003. We're still in the war in Afghanistan. That one started in 2001. 2001. What, are we going to stay there forever? I asked that, but I think if you bring it up to a lot of these people, they'd say, yeah, no, we should stay there forever. So we're still in the war in Iraq. We're still in the war in Afghanistan. Full-scale wars. By the way, media rarely, if ever, talks about the fact that we're still doing two full-scale wars. And what's going to happen? When we leave, if we leave in 10 years, is it going to be any different than if we leave today? So they say, oh, my God, the Taliban is going to take over. They're going to take over if we leave in 10 years, too. So why not rip off the Band-Aid quick, unless you want to stay there forever, which, again, many of them, I think, do. Still in Iraq, still in Afghanistan. Now we're also in Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Syria, and Libya. And now, to be fair, those are more drone strikes and traditional airstrikes and special ops boots on the ground than full-scale invasions and occupations. But bottom line, we're doing 7 interventions. That's more than under George W. Bush. Neocon, American exceptionalist / supremacist maniacs, George Bush and Dick Cheney. So, 7 interventions. So Obama didn't fight U.S. empire. He expanded U.S. empire. And finally, another one of the biggest ones. He didn't even try to get money out of politics. He didn't even try to get money out of politics. Didn't even try. The biggest problem in our system is money in politics. The biggest problem in our system. So when you have a government, a Congress that has a 9% approval rating, as it recently did, on a good day it's like 20%, by the way, and they just got elected. So they just get elected, but they're rated 9%, 20% favorability. How is that so? That's so because everybody knows they're voting for the lesser of two evils, and everybody knows that they're not looking out for them. They're looking out for the corporations and the special interests and the billionaires who give them money. So we had a Princeton study which found that the U.S. functions as an oligarchy, not a democracy. The people never get what they want. The rich almost always get what they want. So with that being the fundamental cancer in the system, it's the problem that births all other problems. You can't do real, real change and address real, real issues until you get that money out of the system. Obama didn't even flirt with that idea. Didn't even flirt with it. So, to recap, the good that President Obama did. Immigration executive order, rejected Keystone XL, rejected the Dakota Access Pipeline. Banned offshore oil drilling, killed bin Laden, cut the deficit in half, doubled the market. Dodd-Frank, it was weak Wall Street regulation, but better than nothing. Cut small business taxes, raised taxes on those making over $400,000 a year. Ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Brought back stem cell research. Gay marriage. Obamacare, which is weak health care reform, but better than nothing. Freeing nonviolent drug offenders, broke the record. The Iran deal, Cuba deal, overtime rules, save GM. Paris Agreement. Did new pollution regulations with the EPA, stimulus package, created over 12 million private sector jobs, stopped a depression, prevented a depression. The bad. Flint still has no clean water. Our infrastructure gets a grade of D. Broke the record on deportations. Pushed TPP. Signed trade deals with South Korea, Colombia, and Panama. Expanded NSA spying. Left Gitmo open. Wall Street bailout. Didn't prosecute anyone from Wall Street, didn't prosecute any tortures, had a supermajority, but didn't get single payer, didn't even try to get free college, didn't get a minimum wage increase, didn't legalize weed or change the scheduling, gave Israel $38 billion, gave Saudi Arabia billions in weapons, did a drone strike on a 16-year-old American citizen, made most of the Bush tax cuts permanent. We're still in Iraq, we're still in Afghanistan, we're also now in Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Syria, and Libya, so we didn't fight U.S. empire. And he didn't even try to get money out of politics. So, all things considered, what grade am I giving President Obama? I was going to do letter grades, but at the last minute, I decided to change and do numbers. I'm giving Obama a 67. President Obama gets a 67% in office. So, in other words, he doesn't fail because that good column is pretty long and it's got a lot of very important things on there, and we would have never gotten it with a Republican president. So President Obama passes, but the weight of the negative is so immensely strong that he barely passes. And the substance of the negative is so outside of the realm of that which is okay that he barely passes. So the only reason why he's even really passing is the Iran deal. I mean, the most important ones in my mind. So the freeing nonviolent drug offenders, Iran deal, Cuba deal, overtime rules, save GM, Paris Agreement, new pollution regulations, stimulus package, preventing a depression. Those things are the things that are saving him from failing. But the bad is a lot of bad. And the biggest things in the bad category, to sum it up, he expanded U.S. empire. He didn't even keep it at the same level. He expanded U.S. empire, which is one of the biggest problems we have, is our imperialism. He didn't care about due process or habeas corpus or the Constitution or the Geneva Conventions by doing a drone strike on an American citizen. So you further set a precedent of lawlessness instead of bringing back lawfulness, which you promised to do after Bush. So that's a huge downside. And you also didn't even attempt to do the most important thing that faces us, which is the problem with which births all other problems, which is getting money out of politics. So that's my overall breakdown. I hope it's enlightening. Now, I already know there are going to be a lot of people who are more Democratic partisan loyalists who are going to say, I'm way too hard on Obama. And for even what he accomplished, it was amazing because of the obstruction and all these other things. There are going to be Dem partisan loyalists who say that. But then there are going to be liberals and progressives who say, you're crazy for even passing him because those negatives are so incredibly negative that they outweigh almost any of the good that he did. Obviously, I'll just go on the record right now and say, I don't agree with either one of you. I think that an exact mix of what you're talking about is the proper mix. And I think there was just enough good for him to pass because it could have been a lot worse. Remember how bad Bush was. For God's sakes, remember how bad Bush was and probably how bad Trump is going to be. So it could have been a lot worse. And the good that he did was actually really important. But yes, the bad is so goddamn bad that I couldn't even bring myself to give him like a C+. So that's my breakdown. I hope you guys like it. And I try to be as detailed as humanly possible, and I think we succeeded. All right, guys, I'm out of time, and I love you. We'll get to all the other stuff tomorrow. Mwah! Peace, everybody.